Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to UFO Think Tank with your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Mis amigos, I am here with my little chihuahua Tessa. She's got my back here looking for the MIBs. Like I said, you know, she runs our security. So you may hear her in the background. She's looking at me like, yep, I got it covered, man. So we'll be sure we have a safe event here. And we've got a great show. All right, we got some cool people popping into the chat. You know what? And I got to say, people popping into the chat, I am like... just very honored to have some of these people. Grant Cameron, who was my guest a couple times ago, and some others. It's wonderful to have people in here with great minds like that. And Angela Joyner, our guest tonight, has been popping in there as well. And this is going to be a good show. Angela, you may remember about a year ago, Stephenville, Texas was all over the news. I don't know what country you're listening from, but... every country heard about the UFOs in Stephenville, Texas, and they all saw Angela on TV. She was on Larry King. I don't know what else. We'll talk to her, but she was all over the place. So we'll be meeting with her and actually doing the MUFON public education thing and the press thing. I got to work with a lot of stations, and I got to work with Angela during that time. So we'll go back and through memory lane and talk about how that all happened, our experiences from our point of view. You know, there's a lot of stuff that happened back there I haven't been able to talk in detail with Angela about, so that's going to be a lot of fun. And she's got some updates in the news already this week. There's more sightings out there in Stephenville, and she's got more updates about witnesses, some possible weird stuff going on out there. So this is going to be a great talk. She's a real fun, lively person, and she doesn't think she has much to talk about, but I'll bet you that we will run out of time. We're going to have so much to talk about. So that's a lot of fun. That's coming up. Like I said, you know, UFOs in the news. If you're at UFOthinktank.com, you can scroll down, and you can see that info there. If you're on my blog talk, you can see the Yahoo Groups link on the right or the UFO Think Tank, and you can go to some of these stories. Or I just became a new user of Facebook, and I'm loving it. You know, I always stayed away from some of these social groups because I just don't have the time. But Facebook is a lot of fun, I got to say. There's been people telling me I got to join, and I'm glad I have because I got a lot of great friends on there. So if you're on there, I post everything up there, videos, everything. So, and all of these places, you can go and find some of this stuff. But some of the news stories that I have posted recently are those Stephenville, Texas sightings, also possible sightings in Pennsylvania. If you've heard my show previously or heard me on UFONaut Radio, we've talked about Pennsylvania and how they've had a lot of sightings. Or if you saw the MUFON show on Discovery, you saw the episode on Bucks County and the Pennsylvania sightings out there. And they've got more going on, including a picture. So still sightings going on in that area. Sightings are... there's stuff going on all over the world. In fact, Argentina and Germany have had some interesting sightings. In Argentina, some guy has what appears to be a crop circle in his yard from what he says a UFO landed there. Germany, the officials are saying that their FAA, their version of it, clocked and they got on radar a UFO. So they're saying, yep, that thing was going fast. We don't know what that was. That was not something that was ours that we clocked on radar. So an interesting story there. I think Angela's been asking about that. And then also on space.com, an interesting story. That's a great site if you've never been there, of course, for conventional astronomy. But sometimes they do venture onto our side of the line, our side of the tracks. And a story on alien contact attempts. So essentially a story about how people, ever since the 50s, have been coming up with ways to talk to ETs. And they do include SETI, because the search for extraterrestrial intelligence going on in New Mexico, more of a conventional outlook where they've got these radio antennas and they're listening for radio signals from ETs. You know, they want to hear some of the early music, I guess, that the ETs had going on, see if they had some rhythm and blues, if they got soul out there in the universe. But a lot of people say, you know, they're talking with them right now, so you don't need to use your radio telescopes. Also, big news, Denmark releases some UFO archives. However, one thing that's kind of funny about that is Denmark released its UFO archives, but they only released about 330 of them. I guess 200 of these are unknowns from some of the research that they've done. When previously, when they talked about releasing these this information, they were talking about releasing 13,000 files. So where did the rest of those files go, and why haven't they released those? And that's kind of an interesting thing when we're talking about, oh, these other countries releasing information, including Britain. They're not releasing everything. They're giving us a little bits and pieces, and especially in Britain, they're giving us a few stories at a time, telling us that they're going to keep feeding us information, so we'll have some good stuff coming up. And that is the story of the week that I'll end my UFO updates on, which is Nick Pope. If you haven't seen this, Ross Hemsworth, a guy who does what's called a Strange Things Conference. He's a great radio host out in the UK, and he was interviewing Nick Pope, and Nick Pope, I guess, let it slip that while he was working for the Ministry of Defense, the RAF did have orders to shoot down UFOs. So he mentioned that, and that news has gotten all over the place. So he's been doing some interviews, including on Fox News, America's newsroom. They did an interview with Nick Pope where he had mentioned this, and they were pretty amazed. And this interview is now up on YouTube. So you could go to my Facebook. I've got it pasted there. If you go to my YouTube site, which if you're on Blog Talk, like, you could go to the link on the right or go to UFO Think Tank and click the link under the videos I have there. But under my favorites, I have this video, but it's a great video. You got to check it out. These Fox News hosts were pretty much in shock that, you know, this official who worked for the Ministry of Defense is over here talking about the RAF shooting down or trying to shoot down UFOs. So that's been some big news this week also. So as usual, there's always a lot going on in the media regarding UFOs. And speaking of the media, let's get our journalist Angela Joyner on the line and we'll get this started. I already see her in the chat. People are harassing her. Please leave her alone for a sec. Let her talk. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you, Alejandro?
All right, I'm doing great. Not too bad. I've got some peppermint tea here to spike me up and calm me down, and I'm excited for tonight.
All right. And you have a chihuahua?
Oh, yeah.
The guard?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's my
little
guard.
Well, I have a half chihuahua.
Oh, really? Well, see, you're in the right climate for it. They're desert animals, so
yeah.
She cuddles under the blanket a lot over here when it gets cold. It's been cold out here lately in Colorado. All
well,
right.
We have some things going on here recently in Stephenville, so let me tell you what I know.
Okay.
Well, January the 29th, it seems that we may have had another mass sighting. I am trying to interview some people. I did get a hold of one person today in Walnut Springs, which is near Glen Rose, and you might remember Glen Rose is where Steve Allen lives.
Mm.
So that's southeast of Stephenville, and his name is Matt Collins, and he was looking back towards Stephenville. He said it looked like it was either over Stephenville or the Chalk Mountain area, and it was another case of lights, three reddish-orange glows, but he said he could distinctly tell there was a dark mass between the lights. So it really looked like the lights were attached to something. And his sister was with him, and I haven't gotten to talk to her yet. And then maybe the biggest news that I'm trying to confirm is I'm hearing that a Dublin police officer has captured that UFO on dash cam. Now, you might remember we had that happen before.
Mm-hmm. And they were hesitant to come forward, right?
Well, I sent a FOIA to the Dublin police station here, and I did get what he had. At least, you know, I think I got it all. I guess there's no way really for me to know that. Some of the officers don't believe that I got it all, but it wasn't a good film. But I will be sending a FOIA Monday. Well, I probably won't even send it. I'll probably just walk it into the station and see if there's any truth to that, that, you know, if they did get something on dash cam for January the 29th, then, you know, maybe I'll be able to get that. And then in the latter part of 2008, we had sightings on October the 23rd and November 18th. So we're working a FOIA for FAA radar data again for October the 23rd. We've had some difficulty getting that from the FAA. Apparently, their equipment wasn't working correctly that night.
Hmm.
And so all of a sudden, we have this unreal price to get radar data. On January the 8th, the cost was $12.85. But now they say they have to go through their Houston office, and it's going to be almost $400.
That's kind of strange. It seems like they're playing some games there, huh?
Well, you never know.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to thank my friends on Open Mind Forum, because they are pitching in, everybody's pitching in for the money to go ahead and get that. So hopefully we'll have it in a couple of weeks. It's just been a long, drawn-out process. And as you know, Robert Powell and Glenn Schultz did the January the 8th radar report. And hopefully, you know, we'll get more good data and be able to put together another report like that one.
Mm-hmm. Now, which is the day that they're saying their radars weren't working?
October the 23rd.
Okay, October 23rd. Interesting. Yeah,
now,
that's kind
we
of a
did
scary
not,
prospect.
We didn't send a FOIA for the November 18th sighting because it seemed that at that time it would have been below radar. The witnesses at that time, from their descriptions and all, we can't get anything below about 2,800 2,800 feet. So whatever that they saw was lower than that. So we didn't file a FOIA for that time.
And then there was another sighting that made a lot of news last year in Stephenville. That was it was on CNN, where that family got some interesting video.
That was week. That was that week in October of the 23rd.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that was a Dublin family here. And I did try to hook up with that young man, and he had so many basketball practices and things, there wasn't a time I could hook up with him. But I did speak with Jim Douglas at Channel 8, and Jim took that film to some expert person that analyzes film, and you know, he deemed it a good video. So, mm-hmm. but you people that are interested in that can go to WFAA.com and see that film there.
Okay. Now, he never did a follow-up story, though, on his analysis, I don't think. Do you know if he did?
Yes, he did. Uh-huh. I believe he did.
Oh, really? Because I never saw
that. Yeah, that was like that was like the next night or something, and then mm-hmm. two nights later, he had myself and Ricky Sorrells on because we were having an, what would you call this? We had someone in a plane, and, you know, they had a cell phone. And actually, Robert Powell was one of the ones in the plane. And there was a bunch of us on the ground. And because there had been so many reports, then they were flying. And if they saw something, they were going to tell us the direction to drive. So he did a little story on that, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds pretty
You should
neat.
Be I'm here. Up. You should be here, Alejandro. We have a lot of fun.
Yeah, that would be nice. I know for the October thing, you know, I was talking to the news guy out there. In fact, I gave him a call, and he was with you, I think, and Glenn were out there. But we had sent someone out there, but we didn't, unfortunately, really find much on the October thing. And we thought it was going to be a big story, but I hadn't heard any follow-up. So that's cool. He did some analysis on that video. I'm going to have to try to find that video to make sure it gets on YouTube.
Well,
so
you know,
see that.
I had heard you guys had a star team member here that week
mm-hmm.
or at right after that week, but I never heard from him, and I was hoping that you would be putting out a report, but I hadn't seen one.
Yeah, and I know some of the stuff he got, he said he was talking to some twins who had some video that he saw that he thought was interesting, but then they said they were going to give it to him, but then they didn't return any of his phone calls or answer when he went by their house, so he never got a copy of that. And it's kind of weird how that happens.
Well, see, on October 23rd, there was a whole football stadium full of people that saw it. And
mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, it was the night, it was a Thursday night, they had a junior high football game going on. And actually, here at home, my husband called me outside. And say, come look at this. And so I got out there, and I realized that what I was seeing was flares. You know, they were coming out left to right, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And about the time the third one would be big and bright, then the first one would start going out. So at that time, I'm outside in the yard looking at this. My brother calls and says, hey, are you looking at the UFO? And I said, no, I'm looking at flares. And he's talking to his wife saying, oh, Angela says this is flares. So he said, I got to go. I'll call you back. Well, what he saw was not flares. He managed to get a picture on his cell phone. But
mm-hmm.
he didn't get the whole thing in there. He got two of the lights. But what he was seeing, it was lights that were horizontal, and then they would move, slide up into a vertical position.
Oh, wow.
So
interesting.
Then they would go off, and they would come back on in the horizontal position and slide back up to vertical again. And this happened about four or five times. Well, he's, you know, screaming at his wife to pull over. They end up pulling over in the intermediate school parking lot. Other people pull over, too, because they're seeing the same thing. But, you know, flares don't start out horizontal and move upwards. You know, they move downwards. So that wasn't flares. And he did get a photo, and two of the lights are in his photo, but he failed to get the third one in the viewfinder.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and as far as you know, that family, were they the only ones to get the video, any video of it or pictures, besides that little bit your brother got?
Yeah, they're the only ones that I know of. That's not that unusual, Alejandro.
Oh, right.
The man I talked to today that had the sighting in Walnut Springs, he's actually a photographer. And he thought he was going to get pictures, right? But this thing comes up, and, you know, it comes up quickly, and they're looking at it going, okay, what is that? He's with his sister. He grabs his camera. He forgets that he had filters on from the day before. So the filters that he was using caused him not to get anything at all, and he was very disappointed because he said he's been one of those that goes, God, why can't anybody get any pictures?
Yeah.
And now he finds himself in that same situation.
Well, I know, you know, the first thing I saw something strange, which I call UFO because I don't know what it was. A few times, you're just kind of like, you don't want to take your eyes off because you don't know how long it's going to last. And so you don't want to go grab something and come back and then it's gone. So I can understand how people would feel, you know, because you're just, wow, what is this? And your mind is trying to think, is this X, is this Y, is this Z? And your mind's so busy that you want to keep an eye on it.
You don't know how long it's going to be there.
Mm-hmm. People in the chat are asking some good questions. In fact, Robert Powell's in the chat, and he was talking about when he was up in the plane, he saw the flares also, and then you saw flares on the October 23rd. What's going on with the flares? Does it seem like there's more flare activity lately?
Yes, it does. And, you know, I've lived here, you know, all of my life, basically. I moved away, you know, in my early 20s and then moved back in my early 30s. And I've never seen flares before. And I was speaking with Officer X, and he's never seen the flares before. He said, I was born in the Stephenville Hospital. What's up with all these flares?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, we have no way to prove this, okay? But it just seems like the flares are being put out as a distraction so that, you know, if something's in the area, it seems like they're putting out flares to go, oh, yeah, that was us. And I'm speaking of the military base in Fort Worth.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, that was us.
Yeah,
we were practicing flare throwing, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
There's a man that night that Robert Powell was in the plane. We were out at Ricky Sorrell's place. Now, he lives about 2.5 miles outside of Dublin. So we were out there, and the man that lived behind him came driving up, and he's an older gentleman. And Rick says, how long have you lived here? He says, well, I've been here since 79 at this place. And he said, well, how many flares have you ever seen here? He said, zero.
Wow.
So, you know, it's strange that we would have all this flare activity, I think. And especially, it's a little bit concerning, our area is quite often in a burn ban.
Mm.
So I have been told by different former military pilots that they do not drop those things over grassy areas, you know, because they do have some that do not work properly, and they may, they call them fizzlers, and they may, you know, fall to the ground and then ignite. Well, if you're in a dry, grassy area, that could mean big problems.
Right. You know, interesting enough, it's just recently, just a few weeks ago, I saw this sort of flare for the first time. I was coming back from Pueblo to Denver, and in between is Colorado Springs. Colorado Springs has Peterson Air Force Base, Cheyenne Mountain, Shriver Air Force. It's the headquarters of Space Command, and Fort Carson is kind of in between Pueblo and Colorado Springs there, and they do a lot of maneuvers in that area. And I actually one night saw all these flares coming out. It's pretty cool because it is crazy because it's out of nowhere. It's so dark. You can't see the craft. And all of a sudden, here's this array of flares shooting out. So it is.
Right.
It's impressive.
And that was the way it was the night that I saw them. I could not see the jet, but I could hear it. So, you know, you sometimes maybe you can hear something even if you can't see it. But, you know, Robert has sent FOIAs to try to find out when those flares have been dropped and how often and, you know, why is it being done. So, you know, we'll see what happens in that regard.
Yeah.
And some of the sightings here, you know, I'm sure have been the flares, because if you've never seen them
right.
before, you just go, wow.
Yeah.
And, you know, I actually went online and looked up video that was for sure flare so that I could understand, you know, if I did see them, you know, what I was looking at. And I would suggest that to any listeners, especially if you're in our area, that you go online, find video of flares, and then if you see that in the sky, you'll know what you're looking at that way.
And the flares are a perfect excuse for some of this video, because they are in an array, you know. There's five or six or a certain amount of them that are in line together. They can be in a V shape, or often are in some kind of arch shape. And so it's very similar to some of the videos they got. But, of course, now that I've seen them and you've seen them, the flares move in a direction and fade out, not like
right.
what a lot of these witnesses are talking about, or the video that Fox News showed.
Well, and flares don't go up in a vertical. You know, they don't move up. They're falling down. And like the ones that I saw, they, by the time the third one was big and bright, the first one was fizzling out. So they go out fairly quickly. So, like the guy in Walnut Springs, Matt Collins, he said these things, you know, were three in a row, horizontal. So, you know, one wasn't getting dim while the next one was getting bright. So it wasn't flares. But
it definitely makes it easy for them to say that, nope, you know, we were doing flares. We can prove it. Here's our records that show
right.
we were dropping flares. But, you know, maybe someone will want to be honest, and maybe one of Robert's FOIAs will come back and it'll say, we were dropping flares on UFOs to try to light them on fire.
Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's wishful thinking, but, you know, at least Robert's out there trying.
And the thing about it is, back on the January the 8th sighting, there wasn't any reports of flares that night that I, you know, that I remember or that was reported to me. Now, this flare thing seems to be occurring, you know, in the fall, you know, like at the beginning of October on. So I don't know what's up with that, but it does look a little suspicious.
Yeah, very. All right, thanks for the update. And, you know, maybe you'll remember some more stuff. But you know what I'd really like to do is kind of a play-by-play of Stephenville and how it all worked out. And one of the things that I thought was funny, and for me it started with, I think it was your phone call, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I thought this was kind of fun, is you gave me a call. You asked if any MUFON people are investigating this. I said, yeah, here's the Texas people information, and you got a hold of our guys down there in Texas and worked with them. And then you called me back, and maybe it wasn't you, maybe it was Angela Brown, but I think it was you. You called me back, and you were like, hey, they're not going to go out there for another week and a half. I need to write my story tomorrow. And I was kind of like, well, I'm sorry. I guess we'll just have to wait. But,
I think that was Angela Brown. I bet that was Angela Brown. Because the first person, the first person that I heard from MUFON was Steve Hudgens.
Okay.
And he called me at the newspaper, and he had seen the stories and, you know, just kind of was asking me questions and things. And I worked with Steve to coordinate that meeting in Dublin for the witnesses to come forward. Do you remember that?
Yep, gotcha. So
that
and
meeting,
how was it for
yeah.
you? I mean, you got these phone calls about these sightings. What were you thinking at that point as a reporter? I mean, had you thought much about UFOs at that point? Were you thinking, what are these guys up to? What were you thinking as you received these sighting reports?
I was not interested in UFOs before this occurred. If I saw something on television, you know, I might watch it and think, wow, that's pretty neat, or I might pick up and read something, but I did not follow the whole UFO phenomenon. And I was very surprised to learn how many people are in the UFO community and how many credible people are in the UFO community. You know, I remember early on, I mean, this was right in the beginning, I kept getting this email from this guy named Timothy Good. And I was like, who is this guy? He's in England. Why is he emailing me?
Right.
And he kept telling me about his book, Above Top Secret, and was wanting me to ask his publisher for it. And I think he was trying to establish his credibility with me. But at the time, I was thinking, look, mister, I'm not going to write your publisher for your book. I don't know who you are. And then, you know, later on, I find out, you know, he's a very well-known, respected ufologist. And I thought, oh, you know, it was just unreal how it all happened. My email at the newspaper had to be dumped twice because
wow.
It just got so crazy. It just froze my computer up and I couldn't do anything. And the phone calls were just unbelievable also. So I was responsible.
Who were the,
usually,
who were the phone calls coming from mostly?
Oh, they were people from the area saying, well, what was it? I saw it too. Or they wanted to know, is this the reason that we're having all these helicopters fly over? What's up with all of the military traffic? And see, I was inside, right? And that day I went to lunch, walked out to the parking lot to my car, and I look up and there's two of those big green military transport helicopters. And I thought, well, is this what everybody's calling me about? Is there really increased air traffic? And I kept getting those phone calls, and I believe there was. You know, we're used to a certain amount of traffic here because we are in the flight path from Fort Worth to Brownwood, which, you know, the Brownwood military operating area. So we're used to a certain amount of traffic. Those jets fly overhead going back and forth and things like that. But it was more traffic than usual, and that had people curious. You know, they were calling me saying, do you know what it was yet? And is something kind of going on? Like, are they here hunting for something or what? So we were all, you know, kind of questioning that.
Yeah, so that is kind of weird. So there definitely was, and I heard somewhat about that, but not a lot about the helicopters, you know, around the area. So then Angela Brown gets involved.
Angela Brown called you.
Yeah.
Now,
she called
Ricky Sorrells, and she did the story with him the following Monday. And once she posted that, it went all over the world. I think Jim Douglas told me it went within 14 hours.
Yeah, I remember that was, and she was an AP writer, which was kind of exciting. I mean, but still, we get AP writers. We get lots of writers. So I wasn't that excited. I was kind of like, oh, this is cool. You know, national news is paying attention, but I wasn't expecting what happened. I remember because that story hit on the 11th, and then boom, you know, like you said, it went all over the world. I'm sure you were receiving phone calls. I was receiving phone calls. Everybody.
It was crazy, wasn't it?
Receiving phone calls. Luckily, I wasn't busy at work, or else I probably would have got fired. I would have had to make a choice, but I was on the phone constantly for 2 or 3 days until, lucky for me, a story came out with our Texas director's phone number on it, and then everybody started calling him directly. So that took the heat off for me, but it really messed him up, obviously.
Yeah, it was crazy. You know, I had never experienced anything like that in my life. And and it was just the Stephenville newspaper is small. I was the only full-time reporter at the time. So, you know, yeah, everybody was trying to help. And we had a halftime reporter, a sports writer, myself, and the editor and the paginator, and that was the newsroom. So,
wow, I didn't know it was that.
You know, and this went on for several days, you know, like 10 days. And just when we thought that it was about to die down and we were all going to be able to take a breath, then Major Carl Lewis at the Naval Air Base in Fort Worth comes out with his press release saying there were 10 F-16s that night when he had first said they had nothing in the area. And then, oh my gosh, that just fueled it right back up. And, I mean, people were calling again, and they were going, oh, it's a cover-up, and, you know, it was just crazy. It got all crazy again. So it was a story that went on a fairly long time there.
What were some of the funny stories that you got from the media? Because I know I have at least one or two. One in particular I thought was really funny.
What was that?
It was the Geraldo show. Because they kept calling, and they're like, you know, I don't know. They're calling, and they're like, should we send a cameraman? You know, then they call, can you guys take some cameras out there? Can some of your guys take footage and send it to us? Then they call back, and they're like, hey, you know, Bill, somebody is going to be out there. One of their other MSNBC people is already going to be out there. I thought we were exclusive, and that was just a message. And I was like, there's no exclusivity when it comes to this. It's worldwide. Everybody's going to be out there. You know,
yeah.
I can't make people stop going. So then he backed up and he's like, okay. And he calls up the producer and he's like, do you think I should send a crew? How big of a crew should I send? You know, how many cameras, all this? I don't know, you know. I don't know what you want to do. So I was like, yeah, send a crew. You know, get a couple cameras out there with a few guys. And then
oh, come on. Alejandro, you missed your chance. You should have said, you're going to need 6 cameramen, 12 reporters.
Oh, yeah.
Get them there now.
You're right. I should have told them, there's a field outside my house. Bring a chopper by. Pick me up.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take you out there, and I'll escort you. And then eventually,
well,
that was one of the real funny ones that I had.
You know, the funny one for me was I got a call from to do an interview from this news station. I don't even know what it was, but they were in Japan. And
yeah.
I remember I was sitting there talking to them, and I really had a hard time trying to decipher what they were asking me. Their accent was heavy, and, you know, I'm from Texas. I don't talk to people all over the world.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, oh, my God, everybody in Japan is going to think I'm hard of hearing because I kept saying, can you repeat that, please?
That reminds me of Lost in Translation with Bill Murray, kind of like, what are they talking about, you know? Japanese, yeah, the Japanese show up. That's what's funny thing, too. They're really into this stuff, and they'll show up in the most interesting places and out of nowhere, and they want to buy this video, and they want to do this and that. So
exactly.
Did you have some other international groups that were kind of interesting calling you up?
You know, we had some visitors from Brazil, and I went to Steve Allen's office in Glenrose and spoke with those guys, and they were neat guys. But, you know, their office was in New York, but they sent, you know, footage. They sent news and footage back to Brazil, and they had just had a big sighting there in a sugarcane field.
Oh, neat.
And so that was why they were really interested, I think, is because this sighting had been a big one for them to cover, and so the January the 8th sighting was right on the heels of their sighting. So it was kind of interesting to talk to them about, you know, what they knew about what happened in that sugarcane field. So,
and then during,
you know,
this
and that,
time,
and that was the first time that, you know, I started kind of clicking, like, oh, okay, this goes on all over the world. It's not just,
right.
You know, I really didn't know. I didn't know that. I mean, that sounds stupid, I know, but I didn't keep up with things.
I don't blame you, though. I mean, how are people to know, really, when I got involved with this, where I was so interested and watched all the TV shows and Sightings, which was a good show, while that was on when I was younger. But there was so much, once I found out, there was so much more that the media doesn't cover. There's a hole. I mean, it's like the tip of the iceberg, literally, what people see. 90% of this phenomena is behind the scenes, and people aren't seeing the real legitimate stuff that's going on all over the world,
you know,
like you said about this.
That's true. And when the Stephenville Radar report came out, I sent out probably 18 press packets to everyone that had been here, like Good Morning America and, I don't know, Bill O'Reilly or whoever, because I thought that they would want to do follow-up stories, you know. I'm going to send them to the mainstream media that they've already been here, so it should interest them. I couldn't get anybody to listen about the radar report. I was very, very disappointed in that. And I remember you were sending those out too, right?
Yeah, I was sending them out. Angela Brown did give me a call back, and she did a story on it. And I think you talked to her too during that period of time. But that was about it. And here again, you know, I thought, oh, here we go, because here goes the AP story. But no, it didn't hit. And that's so weird. You know, the media is just so fickle.
Angela Brown did a story on the Texas MUFON report, which wasn't the same at all.
Yeah, no,
she never did a story on the Stephenville radar report.
Yeah, really. And, you know, with the MUFON part, the original Texas report was very preliminary, some basics kind of thrown out there. And I think a lot of people got the wrong impression, because it certainly wasn't like a poo-pooing the whole thing type of thing. It was just the opposite. It was, there are lots of credible witnesses we've talked to. But it certainly was not as exciting as the work that Robert and Glenn did with the radar stuff.
Not at all. And that the radar report is what all debunkers ask for. It's hard evidence. And, you know, you go on Larry King, or you go on, you know, some sort of news show like Bill O'Reilly or something, and they have a debunker on there. Well, where's the hard evidence? Well, this is it. And that radar report ties 8 witnesses in location and time to that unknown on the radar. And to me, that's better than a photo.
Right.
You know? And
yeah.
You can't get anybody to pay attention to it. I don't understand that. You know, that the story now that's out, it happened yesterday, that the German officials are saying their January the 19th sighting, that they have, you know, ruled out any conventional aircraft, weather balloons, any of that stuff. It's a mystery. They don't know what it was. Now, you have German officials coming out and saying that, and it's not a big news story. I don't understand that.
Yeah, well, you know, you were at our MUFON conference where we had a general with the Air Force for Belgium talking about their research into these triangular UFOs and a picture with the, and people don't pay attention. It's so strange.
They don't. You know, I really wish I could work for some mainstream media, and then, you know what, I could push them through somehow, but they just now, part of the reason that I think I didn't get response from mainstream media on the radar data is because, and I have been in this situation myself, I think they saw Stephenville, and they said, oh, we've done that story, we need something new, you know. They're always looking for something new, but in that case, when if that was their thought process, you know, they really missed the meat of the story, I think.
Right, I agree with you. Now, getting back to kind of our timeline with in the middle of the media frenzy, and when you were contacting, I mean, you contacted the military, I think, before that, but your conversations back and forth with the military, the naval base, how did that go? Did it go well? Did they treat you well? Did they take you seriously?
Oh, yeah. Major Carl Lewis was the spokesperson, And he was very friendly, and just I would call him an outgoing man, and talked to me, and you know, he wanted my stories, you know, well, email me your story, and I did all that, you know, and I had tried to get him to email me his comments. I tried really hard to get him to do that, but I guess he wasn't falling for that. He would never do that. But he was speculating on what he thought people might have seen. He thought it might have been sunlight glinting off of two airliners, because he said he had been a pilot for 30 years, and he had seen some things like that that could really blow your mind, you know, if you didn't know what it was. And so, you know, I wrote about that. I put that in one of the stories, you know, that Major Carl Lewis thinks it could have been blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Well, I think that I think that got him in trouble, because he sent out that press release to radio people only. I was at my desk. I get a phone call from this radio station. They want to do an interview. You're live. You're on the air. What do you think about the Air Force backtracking on their statement? And I'm going, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so I hung up, and the girl from Channel 11 was emailing me and going, what is up? Well, she found the press release and sent it to me. I never got it. I ran to the fax machine. I checked my email. You know, so here I go, and I start trying to call him. Well, it's hard to get a hold of him, but he had given me his cell phone number, so I got him that way. And I know he must have had somebody in his office, because any question I would ask him, he would just say, Miss Joyner, I'm sorry, all I can say is, and he would read that press release. So
wow.
He was like a different guy, and it certainly seemed to me that he had been reprimanded, and he probably, you know, had been given very strict instructions that that's all he could say.
Well, it's interesting, too. It'd be so interesting to have some insight from him, because he originally said, no, there was nothing there in the area. Is that protocol to deny, or in other words, lie to the public about those, you know, what's going on there? Or was it a mistake he made? That's really strange. And then not until after the FOIAs went out did he say, okay, we did have things in the area, because we were able to, Robert and Glenn were able to prove that those jets were in the area using the FAA data.
Exactly. So, you know, that would be a good question. And Robert and Glenn and I have talked about that. Did he get that FOIA? Or, you know, did the FAA alert him somehow that there had been a FOIA for them also?
Mm-hmm.
Did he, you know, when exactly did he get that? And I don't know, but, you know, we've talked about that. Is that why he came forward with the press release? Because he knew it was going to come out anyway. But what he said in the press release was that, you know, he had checked on it, but there had been an internal communications error.
Interesting. So
yeah, I would like to know if why he fessed up.
Yeah.
And
you
know, I also think, you know, when I first talked to him, you know, he knew that I was a small town reporter. The Empire Tribune has a very small circulation. And he probably felt comfortable, you know, just kind of chit-chatting with me. And, you know, he was just like me. He had no idea the story was going to gain such momentum and go all over the world. And I'm sure he was kind of like, oh, my God, I can't believe that people are picking up on this. And now I better watch my P's and Q's.
Mm-hmm. So then the Dublin thing happens, and that's a zoo. I know. You know, I've got some video. There's some video I think I have up on the MUFON YouTube site. But you see it's just this huge amount of people. And if I remember the numbers right, there are something like 50 witnesses, probably just as many cameras, 500 people overall, with people wearing, locals wearing silly hats and T-shirts, and just hundreds of press people, right? You were there, I assume.
Yeah, I was there, and actually, MUFON brought 50 witness reports, you know, to pass out,
mm-hmm.
and they ran out of those real quick, and somebody had to run down the street and find a copy machine to make more witness reports, and it was like, I know, you know, when Steve Hudgens started giving instructions, you know, there was this little room off to the side and said, okay, now we'd like the witnesses and no press, no cameras are allowed in this area to move to this room. Well, my God, it was like half of the room stood up and the line was going out the door, you know.
Wow.
They couldn't get in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, when they started lining up to get take their place, to go in the room, well, cameras started turning on them. I mean, there was, you know, NBC, you know, ABC, all of them were there. And when that happened, a lot of those people said, forget this, and they turned and walked out. They did not want mm-hmm. to be on camera. And Steve
yeah.
Hudgens and I were, we looked at each other, we go, we're going to have another one of these, you know, because
yeah.
people are uncomfortable.
Yeah, that was my recommendation, because they called and they said, I think we're going to cancel this because it's a media frenzy. This isn't the right way to get reports. And it was, and I said, well, because, you know, I didn't want to turn away all that press. So I said, well, maybe do two. At the first one, tell the witnesses, you know, there's going to be a lot of press there. If you're not comfortable with that, that's fine. Don't come, and we'll meet with you later. When the press isn't around and get your reports, but that's a hard thing to organize as well. So it was a tough call.
Yeah, it was,
I mean,
crazy there.
How would you
there.
Have felt if they said, we're canceling it, how would you have felt?
Yeah, I don't think you could have canceled it. That wouldn't have been a good
yeah.
idea at all. And,
yeah.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't have been the right thing to do. But
it was a tough call.
Yeah, and, you know, we were in this really old building, which we were really grateful for, because we had a hard time finding a place to hold this thing. And, you know, it was more than any of us thought it would be. And,
yeah.
But how do you project, or how do you predict something like that? I don't think you can. You know, we just didn't
yeah.
really realize the scope of it.
Mm-hmm. You have no idea, I guess, till it happens, and it's just kind of an interesting, funny situation. So,
and I think probably because the night before is when we were on Larry King Live, that caused a lot more people to come out, because it was on January the 19th, the very next day.
Yeah. So how did that go? You know, what was that like? Larry King's people calling you up. What did you think about that, and then going live on Larry King?
Well, it was very nerve-wracking. The first time CNN called me was within about 6 days, and they asked me to go on the air in their newsroom, and they wanted a picture of me to put up, you know, because I was just going to be on the telephone. And that was scary enough. You know, I had never done anything like that. And I went into the conference room to take the call because I wanted to be sure that I wouldn't be distracted, you know, and say something that didn't make sense or something.
Right.
And when I finished that call, I came outside of the conference room, and all of my coworkers were there clapping for me. You know, they were so excited.
Wow.
Because they watched it on television, you know,
uh-huh.
and they heard me on television. And then it was just a couple of days after that, I guess, that the Larry King people called and told me they were going to be in town and they wanted to talk to me. And they didn't say anything about me being on the program. And I said, sure. And I met the people, the producers and everything, and then it just wound up that at first they wanted me just to do part of the taped part, and then they asked me to come on the live part. So I don't know really, but it was really cold. We were outside. It's like 34 degrees, and I was shivering, and I was thinking, why are we outside? But we did it at Mike Odom's place in Selden. And they said they wanted it for background, but it was dark, so I still don't understand that to this day.
But
and,
there's a little bit of light. It did look kind of nice. But,
it
yeah.
did?
Yeah.
Well, see,
it kinda...
oh, God, it wasn't worth it, I'll tell you. It was 30 minutes sitting in 34-degree weather. You get really cold when you can't move. And you can't get up even during the breaks because you have all those wires and things.
Yeah, you're all attached. Oh, man.
So it was really something else. And then we were on again on July the 16th, and that's when Robert Powell and Glenn Schultz were on with me.
Yeah, and I know we have you to thank for helping and making getting Robert and Glenn on there, and thank you so much for all of that, because you're right, they did some great work. And if listeners didn't hear Robert Powell talking about the radar that at Stephenville and how that went on, you know, he was on last week, so you could go listen to last week's show and hear that. But they did some, I think, some of the most impressive work that's ever been done in this field, personally.
I do, too. And I think that radar report is going to be a historical document. I mean, maybe not enough people know about it, you know, at this time, but I really believe it will be a historical document. I mean, they did incredible work and put in hundreds and hundreds of hours. And both of them are very smart gentlemen, and they're just great guys. And I still talk to both of them. Well, we email more than anything, I guess. But, you know, we'll see what happens on this October 23rd data when we get that back. And hopefully when we get it back and get a report, I can come back and talk to you again.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll definitely, I mean, we're not done with that report, too. I think we're trying to find time and the right situation. But we do want to push that report again now. I mean, the elections were such a big deal. We didn't want to do anything then. So we'll see.
No.
I mean, because that interesting stuff Robert's gotten back, I think it'd be a good idea to try something else, try a new push on it. And anybody can go download that. The link was on the show last week. And also, if you go to MUFON.com, it's right there on top for people to download.
Well, Glenn is the one that is working on the FAA data. So hopefully, you know, we will get that for October 23rd, and we'll have some more news. Let's just hope it wasn't under the radar.
Yeah, flying low. So all of this crazy storm is happening. You have these reports. You have these guys you're talking to. You're probably getting to know them pretty well because all of this craziness, those witnesses, and you are kind of experiencing all of it together. So when did it click? It seems like, if I'm not wrong, all of a sudden this whole UFO thing became sort of an obsession for you. Would that be accurate?
Yes. Yes.
When did that happen?
Well, you know, when I got to know Constable Leroy Gayton and some other police officers that had seen it, and, okay, I'm going, okay, these aren't your run-of-the-mill people. They know what's in the sky, what's supposed to be in the sky, and what isn't, okay? And so it really started me wondering, you know, was there really something, could there be something ET here? And, you know, and your subconscious comes up and tells you all the reasons why you shouldn't think that. You know, it goes against really what you've learned. And so the more I talked to Constable Gayton and Ricky Sorrells and Steve Allen, you know, I was convinced that these people are not wackos. They're not, you know, they're not people that would make this up. And I really wanted to know what was here. And I would say that's when I became obsessed with it. Just the more I talked to them, and then when the newspaper told me not to talk to any of those people anymore, to drop everything, you know, I just felt like that was irresponsible. I didn't think I could just cut them off and leave them out there dangling because they were pushed in the limelight with me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And poor Ricky Sorrells, he didn't even know what AP was. So, you know, they needed somebody to guide them.
Right. And, you know, which is interesting with the story where you're telling us now, too, is that the paper was seemed so excited for you. They were backing it. Everything was wonderful. They're clapping when you come out of the room from your interview. But there was a shift. It changed from this excitement and happiness about it to this, oh, my gosh, we got to get rid of this baggage. And how did that happen? How did their attitude around that?
There were some city council members that didn't like the stories, is my understanding. And, you know, they didn't want to become the next Roswell. They said, you know, we're the cowboy capital. We want to stay that way because we have numerous professional cowboys that live here. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, if anybody pressured that newspaper to drop those stories, it was our own city government. And I'm not saying that's what happened because I really don't know. But one reason I think they wanted to drop it is because they were just tired. We were a very small newspaper, and people were having to pick up my slack. I was supposed to write two stories for the front page every day, and I was lucky to get one done. And so that meant other people were having to cover for me, and they were tired of it. They, you know, they just said, okay, let's get back to regular business, even though it was a record sales month for that little newspaper.
Yeah, interesting. So I guess sometimes, and see, I've kind of told this to people, and I don't wonder if you agree. Sometimes there are things that are that preempt sales when it comes to media.
You know, when it comes to newspapers, advertising dollars are what counts. It doesn't matter how many papers you sell out of the rack. It's the advertisers that matter. And even though it shouldn't be that way, if in this little newspaper, if there was an advertiser that was going to pull out, and I'm talking not just a classified ad, I mean like somebody
local
that
car
spends,
dealer or something.
Yeah, somebody that spends big bucks. You know, they could influence what goes in the news part of the paper. And it's not supposed to be that way. And I don't think it is so much that way in big newspapers. I don't think you would find that in the New York Times or the Los Angeles Times, you know. But that's what happens in small newspapers.
Mm-hmm. I think you do find it, and I've heard of stories where they do find that actually in big papers as well because they have these big giant advertisers. Yeah. Especially around, I know here we had a situation where in Denver they wrote us, or no, it was NBC who wrote something, did this report on Ford, and then they had to do an apology because Ford was threatening to pull out advertising and stuff like that when it was a legit story.
Yeah, well, I know it happens in small newspapers. You know, there was a story that I did. It was unrelated to UFOs, but it caused one of their main advertisers to pull out. You know, it was $25,000 a year. That's a lot for a small paper. And, you know, they were not happy about that. But, you know, that should not influence, you know, what your news is. You know, as long as your news is credible and you've checked your sources, you should be able to write that story. But sometimes that's not what happens.
Yeah. So, and then all of this led to you leaving the paper. And how did that kind of happen?
Right. When they asked me, you know, we don't want you to talk to Steve Allen or Constable Gayton. Stop talking to those people. Get back to the school board meetings and blah, blah, blah. You know, I tried to do that. I tried to honor their wishes. And so here we go, and I'm still getting phone call after phone call about UFOs, and my email is just flooded. And so, you know, I go, what am I supposed to do about all these phone calls? Just ignore them. Don't talk to them. You know, we're going to tell the girls up front to screen your calls. I said, okay. And, you know, I was supposed to go out. I don't think Robert even knows this, But I was going to go out to dinner with Robert Powell and editor overheard that, and because I was telling one of my coworkers, you know, I got to go, I got to meet somebody, and she said, "Who are you going out to dinner with?" And I told her, "Well, that was on my own time, you know, mm-hmm. I wasn't on newspaper time," and she kind of raked me over the coals for that, and so anyway, I go on. And I'm trying to honor their wishes, but really there's no way to. I'm still the witness contact. I'm still the media contact. And it all just became overwhelming for me. So I said, look, you know, maybe I just don't need to be here anymore. And I just handed in my resignation. And I gave 2 weeks' notice. And then a week into that 2 weeks' notice, I came in and they had confiscated my Rolodex and my computer, and it was not a happy scene, and they gave me a cardboard box and said to get out, so that's what I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and that's when it's funny, because with the UFO community, everybody, did you hear what happened to Angela? You know, they got to her, and they had her get her fired in the, you know, Bush. It was the CIA. It was all this stuff. And I know
you know
a lot of info. Mm-hmm.
The UFO community loves the conspiracy theories, don't they? Don't you think?
A lot of times.
And
the majority definitely do. And I have
and
to
so
be
they,
careful with it.
Yeah, they all thought that you know, some government entity contacted the editor or the publisher and said, "Shut her up." No, you know, if anybody did that, it was our own city government. I'm not sure they did it or not, but I have a feeling that's what happened. And, you know, it's just one of those things. What do you do?
Yeah. And it's too bad. If the city would have backed it, and, you know, I'm not passing judgment on them, you know, it can be difficult. If they would have gotten behind it and wanted to turn themselves into a Roswell, they, of course, would have made money off of it some and brought some people out there, but it would have kept this subject in the limelight longer, which is kind of one of those things that's too bad. And, of course, you would have had a job longer, which would have been nice, too.
Well, you know, and just the short time that it lasted, it had a huge economic impact for this little town because – our local T-shirt maker, you know, the company here is called Barefoot Athletics. And I talked with their owner, and they said, we made $90,000 in 10 days on our UFO T-shirts.
Holy
and,
cow.
And I know. And so then the high school science club designed a T-shirt. And one of the designers happened to be a friend of my daughter. She's in high school. So I do a story about that, and those kids made $4,000, and they would have made more, but their teacher said, we had to cut it off. I had to get back to teaching. They had to get back to learning, and she said it was their largest fundraiser they'd ever had, you know.
Holy cow. Mm-hmm.
So,
makes
you know, there were
all those people out there.
Yeah, so there was a lot of economic good things that came from it, because also I know, you know, it drew people here because they wanted to see if they could see something. So they're staying in the hotels, they're eating in the restaurants.
Right. And that's, you know, one thing I was curious about. All these looky-loos come from to try to see something or be a part of all this. Were some of these type of people like rich, influential people from around the world, or were there some what were some of those interesting people?
You know, I don't really know who all was here at that time because I was so busy. I mean, I was just, I mean, I was up early and I was going to bed late, and I'm not really sure who all was here, but I know that there were a lot of people because, you know, we had, in the newspaper, we had a police scanner. And you could hear, you know, the policemen on there, and they would say, oh, you know, yeah, they checked out this person sitting on the side of the road, but they're looking for UFOs. You know, because somebody would call in and go, hey, there's somebody's out here. We don't know what they're doing here, and they're just sitting there. So they would send somebody out to check them. And so that's how I knew that there were a lot of people coming to town.
Yeah, wow. Grant had to leave. He was in the chat for a little while, but I don't know what his deal is, so he had to leave. And
he has a radio interview.
Oh, he does. Oh, that's right. I knew that. I was thinking, I hope he's able to make it for a while, because I saw he has an interview. His questions were, one, I know he's been bugging the heck out of you about this, but he wanted me to ask, are you writing a book?
You know, originally I had thought that I would do a book. And so because so many people were asking me. And so I made an outline, and I go, oh, my God, this is going to be boring. There's no climax. You know, you're supposed to have a plot and a climax, you know?
Yeah.
And so I decided, well, maybe it's better not to do one. But I have been in touch with a editor that I have worked for before, and he was asking me the same question, and he kind of turned things around for me and made me realize another direction that I could go. And so now I'm getting kind of hopeful about that again, that maybe I could do a book.
I think it'd be neat, even if you focused on the events and the climax being you leaving the paper, that would be interesting, I think.
Well, that would only be a month's worth.
Yeah, but a lot happens there, so I think
yeah,
you
that's
could
true.
Write a book. Yeah, a lot. I mean, we've covered most of this hour has been over all that happened then.
Well, do you realize we're over an hour now?
Yeah, I know. I told you we'd have.
Oh,
I haven't even gotten to Grant's second question, and I got some other questions people have asked. But Grant's second question was, if you were to do this all over again, if you know, if this happened to you again, going back there when you got those calls on the UFOs, now knowing what you have, would you have said, "Thanks, call somebody else, bye," or would you do it differently?
Oh, no, I would still do it because, Alejandro, I would have never met you.
Yeah, that's right.
I would have never met Grant Cameron or Robert or all these people that I have become very close to. I would have never known. I mean, my world got so much larger. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful for that, actually. You know, it's been eye-opening, and I won't say that it's all been roses because it hasn't. I mean,
right.
I ended up without a job, and I still don't have a real job. I mean, I work as a correspondent for the Abilene Reporter News, but I just do that from home, and it's not something you can count on. So, you know, it's just it's had its ups and downs, but I think I'm a better person for it, and I think I'm so grateful for all the people that I've found that it's been well worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's good. You know, we certainly very much enjoy knowing you and having you around and talking with you, and I love having you in the chat, and I'm so happy, and I hope you join us on a regular basis in the chat for the show.
Well, I will try to do that.
Yeah. Someone else had written something, and this was Andrea. She said she'd be listening, and you might know, she put in parentheses Southern Star, so maybe she works for the Southern Star or something?
No, she was in the chat last time, remember?
Oh,
when Robert was on?
That was her name, Southern Star. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I see her. Hopefully she'll listen on. But she had some questions. Some of these questions are about kind of ufology in general. I know you've been following the whole field very closely in the last year. Are you feeling like you're starting to get to be sort of an authority or know something about this stuff?
Well, I don't consider myself an authority. No, I don't, because I still have to depend on other people. Frank Warren with UFO Chronicles helps me a lot, and Grant Cameron helps me a lot. Because, you know, some things are out there that I might hear about, and then they say, oh, no, that has already been proven to not be true.
Right.
But, you know, this is a story or whatever. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, there. I mean, you go back to the 50s, there's a lot of stuff to cover, a lot of stuff to learn. So, no,
mm-hmm.
I think I'm still taking baby steps.
Yeah, it takes a while. I know I went into, like, a hibernation for a year, if not longer, when I really, and I just studied and read and read, and I, of course, read Grant's website from beginning to end, because he is absolutely one of my favorite researchers out there. And he's
yeah,
got,
he's
when
incredible.
You talk to him, he's got so much information he hasn't even written down or documented anywhere. He's like this incredible encyclopedia of information.
He is. I thought he was a professor when I first met him.
Mm-hmm.
And
really? Even though he has that Canadian accent?
Well, I thought he was a professor. You know, he said he worked for a university, and
uh-huh.
he's very intelligent, and just the way he handles himself
yeah.
and the way he speaks. And,
yeah.
you know, he can just throw out that almost any question you ask him. He knows the background. He knows the story. And, you know, he's helped me a lot, and I'm forever indebted to Grant. And I email back and forth with him almost every day. And he and Frank Warren and some others, too, you know, have helped me. And, you know, they're the kind of people that I can ask a question, and they don't go, well, what, are you stupid? You know, they know. They know that this whole thing is so vast that
mm-hmm.
When you're thrown into it, it takes a while to get your feet under you.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you some of these questions that she wrote and see what you think. The first one is, there's been a number of swarms in the U.S., U.K., Texas, Reno, Ohio, India, Wales, England, some remarkable photos. Are there any common denominators coming out of these events?
Common denominators from the U.K. and where? Where were the other ones?
Texas, Reno, Ohio, India, Wales.
Well, gee, I don't know. Do you?
I don't see any common denominators, actually. The only common denominator seems to be, I think, and, you know, you might have an opinion on this, how the media is treating it. Ever since Stephenville, and this is something that I think is really unique about Stephenville event also, is that media, since Stephenville, has treated this whole phenomena very well and better, much better than usual.
You know, you're not the first person that has mentioned that to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if that's all I did was change the way that mainstream media looks at it, then, you know, that's a good thing as far as I'm concerned. But I will
yeah.
never forget the Channel 11 reporter was sitting across my desk from me, you know, and her cameraman was there. And she looked at me and she said, how did you have the guts to do this story? You know, I looked at the cameraman. She goes, no, off the record. And I said, well, I don't really know what you mean, but I think that if you had been the one that answered the phone and talked to Steve Allen, you might have done it too. She said, no,
mm-hmm.
UFOs, we wouldn't touch. And there's another lady, the author of The Sixth Sense. Okay,
mm-hmm.
gosh, her name is Laurie Nadel, Dr. Laurie Nadel.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And she contacted me, and
mm-hmm.
She said because of this, you know, her producer had said, look, you need to look at these stories. And she was going, UFOs? No, I don't want to read those. And he said, read these stories. So she did, and she said, you changed my whole attitude. The way you reported, it was serious. It was a strong story. You know, you didn't mention flying saucers or little green men. And now she regularly has on her show UFO people. What do you want to
yeah,
know?
Yeah, I was on her show recently, actually. Well,
I think I recommended you for her.
Oh, cool. Well, thank you. Yeah,
so,
cool. But, yeah, you know, like America's Newsroom. Well, first of all, this I thought is monumental. When the ABC – or, no, what's the one with Al Roker and Matt Lauer? The ladies
love
Matt
Lauer. Oh,
that's
the Today Show. Today
Show.
Yeah,
when they covered it, you know, Anne Rice, I think it was, said, you know, do you guys believe in UFOs? And they're like, yeah. And she's like, quit kidding around. And they're like, no, we do. And they were talking about, yeah, we believe in UFOs, that their ETs are coming here and checking us out. So that was pretty amazing. And then America's Newsroom covered it. And the guy, Bill Hemmer, I think is his name, he was,
yeah,
you know, his co-host asked. And, you know, it's funny with news, too, because lots of these shows, like this one, they have this pretty, these pretty anchors, a man and a woman who kind of flirt back and forth the whole time. But she asked him, do you believe in UFOs? And he paused and he said, you know what? I do. And then he's the one this week who had Nick Pope on Fox News. And
I saw that.
Yeah, that was
really
cool.
Wasn't that phenomenal?
Mm-hmm.
And then did you notice that whenever Nick Pope said that, you know, they had had dog fights with UFOs, and somebody in the background, I guess it was that woman, and I don't know her name, go, you know, you can hear them go, what?
Yeah.
You know, you could tell that they were shocked. Well, those of us in the UFO community knew about that. We knew about those dog fights and things. But I got an email from somebody, I can't remember who it was, and it had a response from Nick about that. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, he said he was trying to get that out, you know, so it wasn't just UFO community knowledge, that it was public knowledge. And then, you know, you have the Danish people releasing their stuff. And, you know, Nick was trying to make a point that it wasn't just UK doing this, that it was going on, you know, other pilots in other countries were engaging in this. So it, you know, that was a pretty big news day for Nick. And I think it's so important that he took the time to do that. He's a very serious researcher. He's not, you know, I have heard, you know, different people say, well, Nick Pope, you know, he's almost a debunker himself. Well,
yeah.
He does go on the, you know, he'll say, well, this was, you know, that probably wasn't anything, whatever. But we all know that 95% of UFO sightings are identified, right?
Right.
So that's mm-hmm. his job, too. You know, if he can identify it, he's going to, and he's going to say that. But it's
right.
the other 5% that we have to worry about.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, people accuse MUFON of that kind of thing. I almost said Mentos because there's someone in the chat with a TOS at the end. But MUFON, because we're very conservative with that stuff. And just like the possible UFO at the inauguration, you know, it's hard to rule out the bird because we've seen a lot of video. I've seen a lot of video. And birds
mm-hmm.
look pretty strange in videos when they're close to them sometimes. I've been fooled by birds and then done further analysis and found, yeah, that was indeed a bird. So it's hard, you know, and I used to get mad at Bruce McAfee when I sent him an investigation and he would say, oh, it was a lamppost, it was this or that. And I'd be like, you know, you haven't even looked at all the information yet. But if you can't rule those things out, it's not something you can go to the press with. You can't go
Why?
To the press with something that looks like a bird and say, this is a UFO and not back it up and say, well, I know it looks like a bird, but, you know, we have
exactly.
witnesses there or something. So you have to be careful, just like he does. The press wouldn't be going to him if he was just kind of saying everything was a UFO.
Exactly. And that's kind of how I treat the Stephenville sightings, you know, because
mm-hmm.
I hear about, you know, different people, I saw this, I saw that. I don't really get excited until I have, you know, several people on the same night. And then I go, okay, maybe there is something to this. You know,
mm-hmm.
one time there was a man in Comanche that he just kept saying he was seeing something. We finally get over there, sit in his backyard with him. And, I mean, this man was serious. His wife was bringing his supper to him in the backyard, and it was cold. And he lived, the way his home was positioned, there was a real bright Allsup's, like a block in front of him, which is a gas station. I don't know if you're familiar with Allsup's. Y'all probably don't have them, but they're...
Oh, I've seen them in Texas, though. I've seen them.
Well, they're very lit up. And we're sitting in his backyard, and his house, his backyard is in a shadow. And we start watching what he's watching, and there is something weird. You would think, well, what is that? But when you really get down to it, and we, you know, filmed some things, it was a bird. But the way that that Allsup's was positioned, it kind of lit up the bottom of the bird and nothing else. And then that thing's darting across the sky. Well, he thought he was seeing UFOs, you know. And I think, you know, he was very sincere. He really thought that he had something, and he was crushed to figure out that it was birds.
Yeah.
But, you know, honest people make honest mistakes.
Yep.
And that happens, and so that's okay. But it's easy to be fooled. And nowadays... Mm-hmm. When you have Photoshop, and people are so good at it, I mean, I can't do anything on Photoshop hardly, but you don't know. I mean, you've got to really have an expert that can go in there and say, you know, it's this or it's that. So,
So you know, we're almost out of time. In fact, we got just a couple minutes, so I just want to ask you, where are you now with all of this? You know, who's Angela Joyner today? And
well, Angela Joyner today is very interested in UFOs. I would say it's probably all-consuming for me. I'm going to speak at the Ozark Conference again in Arkansas.
Sure.
It's in Eureka Springs. That's going to be April 10th through the 12th. You know, I will continue to investigate this phenomena, you know, as much as I can from here in Little Dublin, but
Little Dublin, Texas. But maybe they'll come back. Maybe they're getting ready for some grand finale that you're going to be right in the middle of.
Well, you never know.
We'll see. But thank you for being on. Thanks for being a friend. You know, we'll definitely have you on again in the future. I didn't even get to all of her questions, so I knew we'd easily be able to fill up an hour. But thanks for being on, Angela. I don't have my info for my next guest for next week. Don't worry, I'll have it very soon. I'm waiting to hear back, and unfortunately they weren't able to get back with me today. So keep an eye. Thanks for joining me, everybody. Thanks for Mo and Robert and Omantos, Dennis, and Broomstacker, and everybody in the chat, Grant, for joining us. We'll talk to everybody next week, and you guys have a wonderful remainder of your weekend, and I hope whoever you're rooting for on the Super Bowl wins. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Alejandro. Everyone.